All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
And it's the Tornado Tim Tenneke.
And Psychic Tom Paget with a crystal ball ready to go.
All right. And right off the bat, I can say that I can't steal Tom's nickname again this week because we both got it wrong on Barnett versus Arlovsky. But Arlovsky still had something left, and turned out Josh had more left. Got the rear naked choke submission at the fight over in Hamburg, Germany over the weekend. I did not watch it. But I do know that he won by a rear naked choke. So he got the submission, and he was the first person to ever submit the pit bull there. Which I did not know that he'd never been submitted. But falls to 25-13 in his career.
Yeah, you really have to wonder where this leaves Arlovsky. I mean, three in a row now. Mm.
Tough one. He does say, though, that he is going to keep on going, and, you know, he's got the fire still, so that's another thing that I did read after the fact. Alexander Gustafsson also off again with a unanimous decision win over Jan Blachowicz, so he's trying to get back into title contention. See what happens there. Ryan Bader got... one of the more impressive knockouts of the night. One of the only knockouts of the night, actually. There was only one other one on the main card, anyway. But he got the second round knockout. I'll get the guy's name in a minute.
Yeah, I guess this is kind of a first step for him, digging himself out of the hole that he's been in. So, good for him. Yeah. I understand... first round was pretty competitive, but then that knee was the knee from hell, round two.
Yeah, 206 into round two, hit him with a knee, and it was over. And there was a bunch of decisions. A unanimous decision win for Nick Hine over Tai Hyun Bang. Jessen Ayari won over Jim Wallhead by split decision. Then we had Peter Sabota got a win over Nicholas Dalby by unanimous decision. And Ashley Evans-Smith got the other KO. It was a TKO over Veronica Macedo by punches and elbows. That was 3 minutes and 14 seconds into round number three. And more decisions for the rest of the card. Taylor Lapilis won over Leandro Issa in the fourth fight of the night by unanimous decision. We had a majority draw in the third fight of the night, Christian Colombo and Jarjus Danho. Jack Hermanson got the win over Scott Askham by unanimous decision, and Rustam Khabilov won over Leandro Silva by unanimous decision on that one. And then we've got a big UFC 203 this weekend to talk about. Also, some boxing matches, of course, always going on. It's been a pretty interesting week. We had the results from last weekend. Not a whole lot of big fights, but this weekend
there was big one. Trying to remember, it was a night on Showtime. I got to watch some big fights.
Yeah, I do know, I didn't watch any boxing, but I do know that there was one of the premier boxing champions, there was a right hook thrown that just leveled the guy.
Oh, yeah, I did see that, man. And you know, one guy, tough player, Spanish kid, had like a 13-13 record, the other guy was undefeated, like 7-0, 3 miles. Unfortunately, right now I can't get to my computer to look at their names. But the guy that had the 3 knockouts, they were all in the first round. It was the 6th and final round. He knocked the guy down. He had stunned him a couple times. They're like, he's just not finishing the show. And as soon as they said that, he threw away like an overhand sidewind, goofy looking punch, and it worked perfect. And I mean, it was like boom. As soon as the guy went down, it was like the referee just waved it up and called the doctor.
Yeah, it was bad. It's lights out. I want to say the guy's name was Perez who won.
What did you say?
I want to say the guy who won was named Perez, was his last name.
Well, anytime we talk about a Spanish fighter, you know, like, always a good guess.
Yeah, it is a guess, yeah. We also have a big, big fight this weekend coming up on the 10th. Gennady Golovkin versus Kell Brook. And I believe it's going to be in front of Brooks' hometown fans.
I got a few people that are going with Brook in this fight. And I don't know if they're just trying to go with Brook is to... Because a couple of the guys that, you know, I'm listening to, it's funny. They're very, I like them personally on a personal level, but they're very opinionated as boxing experts. You know, and you can't tell them any different. So they often try to trash a lot of the Eastern European fighters for whatever reason. And that's why I think they're trying to, you know, trash Golovkin on this one.
Right.
But, you know... And they say, you know, oh, Brook's a lot naturally bigger than, you know, that he is. He cuts down in weight and so on and so forth. But, you know, it comes down to the fact that Golovkin is, I mean, he devastates guys when he hits them. I mean, that's the best word to use. He devastates guys. And Brook has never been hit by somebody like that. And, you know, we'll see.
We will see.
You know, it's funny. Because a lot of really thinking Brook has a good chance. Prince Hamed, who looks like a heavyweight, by the way, that man has put on some weight. He's only 40.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. He was using the analogy, and I like the article. I like the writer's comeback to his analogy. He was saying, well, all that Brooks has to do is go back and watch Leonard and Hagler. Well, these are different fighters. And,
exactly.
And the odds are for Triple G, I believe, he's minus 650, and Brooks like plus 440 or something like that. So, yeah, it's just what I understand, Brooks been doing a lot of heavy powerlifting and almost like he's getting ready to stand and trade with him, and I just think that's not the road to go for him at all.
To stand and trade? You know what? Yeah, that's a brilliant idea. That's an idea that's so good. It's like, here's what I think I'm going to do. I'm going to try to train to race Usain Bolt by bulking up.
Yeah. Good point.
Friday night, we got some fights as well coming up. I don't know if these people are related to the great fighter Michael Carbajal, but we got two female Carbajals on this card in Argentina that have some pretty decent records. Two title fights. Well, one title fight. One for the interim WBA World Female Featherweight title. Brenda Karen Carbajal. She's 11-2. Check out this girl's record. She is fighting 43-6-1. Marcella Eliana Acuna. So that's a hell of a record for a female fighter. You rarely see female fighters with over 50 fights, and she has exactly 50 at featherweight. Pretty crazy. Super featherweight as well as the co-main event, and that's Karen Elizabeth Carbajal. She is 11-0 undefeated, fighting Natalia Vanessa Del Valle Aguirre, who is 7-8-3. She almost has more names than fights. a lot of little details there. Anyway, then we've got a pretty interesting one here from Canada, Alberta, Canada. Main event: Cam O'Connell, 11-0-1, and Norbert Kaluksa, who is 11-1. At lightweight. Then we got Samuel Vargas on this card. He is 25-2-1 fighting Ivan Pereira, who is 20-7. Yeah, looks like a pretty interesting card there. Not a whole lot else on there. Let's see what else is going on Friday night. There's the big one. Well, one of the big ones. A couple titles on the line. IBO and IBF World Super Lightweight titles. Edward Troyanovsky, 24-0, fighting Kita Obara, who is 16-1. This is over in Moscow. Rakim Chakiev, who is 25-2 at cruiserweight, will also be taking on Alejandro Emilio Valori, who's 21-10. Those are the two best fights on that card. Over in Vegas, downtown Las Vegas, that's what they call the D, the Las Vegas Event Center. Emmanuel Robles, he is undefeated, 15-0-1 at super lightweight. He's fighting Steve Claggett, who is 23-4-1 for the WBA, NABA, USA super lightweight titles. That's a lot of A's.
That's quite a medal.
And then another title on the line, the WBC United States Super Welterweight title. Nico Macias, who is 12-0, fighting Rolando Garza, who's 9-0 at super middleweight. So somebody's always going to go there. And another fight on the card, looks pretty good. Ismael Mwendo, he's 17-0 at lightweight, fighting Eliseo Cruz Sesma, who's 9-1-1. And then the big, big fight of the weekend is actually in Reading, Pennsylvania.
And I'm
not sure if this is going to be on Premier Boxing Champions or what the story is, but there's a lot of big names on this one. Robert Easter Jr., he is 17-0, fighting Richard Comey, who is 24-0. So somebody's always got to go there, and it's for the vacant IBF World Lightweight title. And then we have the rematch between Daniel Jacobs and Sergio Mora. And Daniel is 31-1. Mora is 28-4-2. This is for the WBA World Middleweight title.
Have either one of you guys seen the odds on that fight?
No. Have not.
Okay. This is astonishing. Okay. Jacob is minus 3,000. Okay. So I guess you're putting up $3,000 to get 100 back. And more plus 1,700.
Wow.
I mean, are you kidding me? 30 to 1?
Yeah, wow. Ridiculous.
Yeah, that's definitely ridiculous. Because that last fight, you know, I mean, Jacobs was down and he was stunned. You know, he was stunned pretty good in that fight.
I mean, in my opinion, Jake should win, but I think those odds are ridiculous. I mean, geez.
Yeah, definitely.
And we've got an article on our website about this too, but our former guest is also on this card, Travis Kaufman, 30-1, fighting Josh Gormley, who's 22-5, and of course Travis is still thinking about title belt in the heavyweight division. And he's one of my first interviews, actually. One of my interviews that was posted on the old MySpace blogs, which are now non-existent. This kind of pisses me off because the actual email address I signed up for with MySpace no longer exists. It was an AOL email address, so I have no way to connect to it. I don't even have a clue how to get my emails from that. And then the only way you can get your blog file that had all that information in it on my site was to, you know, go through your email, and then, you know, there's no way to do it. So, well, that's lost, I guess. Whoever owns MySpace now, I think it's Justin Timberlake or something. he's got a hold of it somewhere. But anyway, yeah. We're definitely rooting for Travis. He's got the one loss there, but always a tough guy. Also on the card, another guy I never interviewed, but I have seen in action up in Boston, Elvin Ayala. He is 28-7-1, fighting Christopher Brooker, who's 10-1 at super middleweight. And another familiar name you might recognize, Kermit Cintron, also on the card. He just joined with Kaufman's dad there, Travis's dad, with King's Promotions. He just signed up with them not too long ago. He is 37-5-2. He's fighting Manny Woods, who is 15-5-1. So obviously another tune-up fight for him to kind of get back in the mix. And then Frankie D'Alba, also on the card. He is 19-2-2 at featherweight, fighting Kian Evans, who is 12-2-1. So that's a pretty packed one.
And Tom and I had the pleasure of seeing D'Alba in a King of Prussia.
Say that again? You broke up a little.
I was just saying, Tom and I got to see Frank D'Alba a couple of years ago in King of Prussia.
Ah, all right. See what we got coming up on Saturday. Obviously, the Golovkin card we'll get to. Now, that is taking place over in the UK, too, so I think that might be why a lot of people think that Brooke can pull it off. Because it's, hometown advantage, I guess.
Well, you know, there's that old cliche, all these fans that have been to ring with him.
Yeah.
Because I don't care where you're at, it's you and one other guy. You know what I mean? And Triple G has shown no kind of mental weakness before. So I think that's all I need to say on that one.
And the Japanese super featherweight title is on the line over in Tokyo. On Saturday, Kenichi Ogawa, he's 18-1 at super featherweight, fighting Kento Matsushita, who is 34-9-7. So it looks like experience over talent there. Or against talent, I should say. We don't know the experience is going to win. And let's see, we got one over in the United States to talk about here. I can find it again. BoxRec's all over the place on me tonight. Right. Got Andy Ruiz Jr. He is 28-0. This one's in Lemoore, California. 28-0 at heavyweight, fighting for the NABF heavyweight title against Franklin Lawrence, who is 21-2-2. Co-main event on this one is for the NABF Junior Super Welterweight title. That's between Danny...
Junior Super Welterweight? You say that right?
Yep. Junior Super
Welterweight. Junior Super Welterweight. Never heard of that.
Well, it's the title. The title name is the NABF Junior title. So it's Super Welterweight is the weight.
Junior is a junior title. I got you now. I thought you meant like a weight class. I was like, what the hell is that?
Somewhere between welterweight and super welterweight. Junior Super Welterweight. Danny Valdivia is fighting for that one. He is 11-0, fighting Gilberto Pereira dos Santos, who's 12-3. And then also on this card, no title on the line, but Raimundo Beltran. He is 30 wins, 7 losses, 1 draw, fighting Miguel Angel Mendoza, who's 22-8-2. Here's another one from California. Jesus Fight of the Week here in the co-main event, but the main event is Carlos Cuadras. He is 35-0-1, and the one draw was his last fight. This is at Super Flyweight for the WBC World Super Flyweight title, and the other guy's undefeated too, 45-0, Roman Gonzalez. So that should be a great, great fight for the main event there. I'm surprised it's not being televised, or at least it's not giving me any indication of it being televised. But then, of course, one of our favorite Jesus fighters of the week, Jesus Soto Carras. He is 28-10-4, fighting Yoshihiro Kamagai, who is 26-3-2. I believe Robert Guerrero fought him not too long ago, a couple years ago maybe now. Had a great fight against him. But, let's see what else we got. Oh. And, of course, the big New England Fights event is going to be Saturday. There's a promotion I'm trying to get a fight with. They're having some boxing matches as well. They got a light heavyweight one at the top of the bill. Brandon Montella, 4-0, fighting Tolleson Lewis, who's 2-1 at light heavyweight. But that's up in Lewiston, Maine, at the same place that Muhammad Ali fought once. I believe it was Liston. Liston versus Ali was up there in Lewiston, Maine.
May 5th, 1965. Yes, sir.
some reason, I didn't see the Golovkin fight. It must have been tucked way down on the list. Oh, there it is. All right. Yep, it's at the O2 Arena over in Greenwich, London. Gennady Golovkin, 35-0 at middleweight, fighting Kell Brook, who is 36-0. Somebody's always gonna go there, unless it's a crazy draw, which I don't foresee happening. Especially if it goes to division in Kell Brook's backyard, you know. It's gonna be tough.
Well, you know, I wonder if that crowd worked against Brooks in this fight.
Maybe.
You know, get him pumped up and want to stand there and be more aggressive than he normally is. That's a possibility, too, you know.
Right. Well, we do have a packed card to support this one as well. Even the way undercard fights look pretty decent. We got one of the third fights from the bottom here. It's Kid Galahad, 19-0 at Super Bantamweight, fighting Emiliano Salvini, who is 17-23-2. So, kind of an opponent there for Kid Galahad, but... some better fights on this card, of course. We got John Riel Casimiro. He's 22-3 at flyweight, fighting for the IBF World Flyweight title against Charlie Edwards, who's 8-0. Then we got Paul Smith on the card at super middleweight. He is 37-6, fighting Daniel Rigi, who is 28-13. And WBC silver super middleweight title versus with super middleweight, obviously. But Callum Smith is fighting on that. For the belt. He is 20-0, undefeated, fighting Norbert Nemesapati, who is 21-3. Never heard of him. But anyway, Super Featherweight's also in action for the vacant BBB of C British Super Featherweight title. Martin Joseph Ward, he's 14-0-2, fighting Andy Townend, who is 16-3. And then we've got the IBF World Bantamweight title on the line in the co-main event. Lee Haskins fighting for that one. He is 33-3 at Bantamweight, fighting Stuart Hall, who has 20 wins, 4 losses, and 2 draws. Also in boxing news, Bobby Chacon died recently. I don't know if it was today or yesterday.
I did hear that.
And it's a tough loss.
Oscar
De La Hoya.
He's been in a bad way for a long time. Yeah, I also heard that.
Didn't read anything about what the cause was, but I did see something come across Facebook.
I heard it was something from a fall, like complications from a fall, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, he was in a convalescent home, so that speaks volumes. And in fact, when I was still living in California in the mid-90s, I know he was really starting to go downhill then. And if you guys ever get the chance, just try to. Yeah, I was looking today at Cornelius Boza Edwards in the rematch he had with Chacon, which was a good candidate for 1983 Fight of the Year. Just an incredible back-and-forth war. And that's the way Chacon's fights were. I mean, there's only so many of them you can go through.
The Schoolboy, it was called, which is probably the weakest nickname next to the Choir Boy, which is Freddie Roach's old next name.
Yeah.
Schoolboy. Why he got that nickname, but 59-7-1 was his final record, and had 47 knockouts. My lucky number, 47. His last fight was Bobby Jones, guy who was 6-12 back in 1988, and had a fight before that against a guy. It was his debut, but he'd been out of the fight game for 2 years at that time, about 2 years. It's fought some big tough guys right up until those last two fights. Fight before that was Rafael Solis, beat him by TKO. His record at the time was 30 wins, 4 losses, and 2 draws. And of course, he fought Freddie Roach, Schoolboy versus the Choir Boy, back in 1985, when Freddie was 36-7 at the Memorial Auditorium over there in Sacramento, California. And Ray Mancini, you still can't get on our show. It's back in 1984, of course. That was in Reno for the WBA title.
I mean, you figure, like, when a song is made about,
you know, getting home to watch a fight. That's pretty big.
And other boxing news. I have not read anything about it, but I did see some headline the other day about Klitschko finally willing to fight Shannon Briggs, supposedly.
Wow.
But I don't know whether this is going to be before or after the rematch he's supposed to have with the big boy there.
Well, it'll be fine. No, it's like Klitschko is finally ready to fight Shannon Briggs. Like, well, you're not the champion anymore. I'm going to take you.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go eat his lunch now.
Actually, I just got a George Foreman grill today, and I had to tell the story about the Michael Moore grill. Michael Moore was on the show, and he said, I was about 2 minutes away from it being the Michael Moore grill.
Yeah, that's right.
And speaking of heavyweights, we got a big heavyweight fight coming up for the title this weekend, September 10th on Saturday. And, of course, Tom's home state of Ohio, out in Cleveland. Stipe bringing the title back home against Alistair Overeem. Stipe Miocic coming in at 15-2 against Overeem, who is 41-14 and has looked a lot better than his first couple fights with the UFC recently.
Yeah, he I think you guys know where my heart's at and where my head's got to be for my prediction on this one. But Overeem is certainly no one to be overlooked. I mean, and it seems like his mental approach is right where it needs to be. I mean, he's been getting some heckling from some of the locals here. You know, some of these classless mommy's basement types, you know, they think they kind of went overboard with it at the press conference. But he's handling everything in stride, and he seems like he's a lot more of a gentleman than he used to be. Maybe, I guess, in his old age, he's mellow somewhat. But I still think Stipe is going to be quick enough to avoid those big bombs on the feet, and I think Stipe's gas tank's a little better, and I also think his wrestling slightly better, so he should be able to pull it off. But he's got to be careful early on, because like all big punchers, Overeem's dangerous, especially early.
Right. Yeah, and Overeem just, you know, he has that what-if factor, because sometimes he comes in there and just blazes through people, and then other times he's got nothing. It's like, I can't believe this guy was such a great kickboxer sometimes when I watch him. It's like,
yeah, just remember what Travis Brown did to him.
Yeah, just demolished. So, you know, it all depends on which Alistair shows up. It's another cliche
yeah.
people like to use. then the co-main event is pretty intriguing. We've got Travis Brown, just speak of the devil, fighting Fabricio Werdum, the ex-champion, who Stipe took the belt from. So, obviously, there's title implications for whoever wins that fight.
Well, yeah, this is kind of a tough fight for Werdum because it's still a bit of a risk, but not much reward because he beat him before. So I don't know. It's going to be hard for Werdum to argue for a title shot just by beating Brown. But Rich, did you catch any of the countdown?
No, not yet.
Okay, you tweeted it out, by the way. I don't know if you knew that.
That's automatic. That's all automatic.
But it was just amazing when Travis Fleff, Jackson's, and Winklejohn's. And he went out there to train at the Glendale Fight Club, and Edmund gets him in the ring, and he says, throw a jab, and Travis Brown threw something, and Edmund said, that's not a jab. He says, you don't know how to jab, and Travis Brown said, show me. Okay. Now,
how do
I don't know
far?
What that says about
that far,
Jackson's and Winklejohn's, if he left with bad feelings or something, kind of saying that, but he seemed to say that with a pretty straight face. And his fundamentals. I remember you were raging about his boxing fundamentals or his defense or lack thereof
right.
after that Werdum fight. If you remember your critique there with his hands down at his hips, like in a Muhammad Ali imitation, except he forgot to pull back like Muhammad Ali would do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, more like the fighting Irish dude, I say. You know the logo for the Fighting Irish with the hands way out by the sides of his head? Yeah, that's kind of what Travis reminds me of sometimes.
Well, I would say this is Verdum's fight to lose.
Right. But it's interesting because, Travis is dating Rhonda. And, of course, you know, that's Rhonda's gym. That's Rhonda's trainer. So.
Right. And that's what he said. He said he did not know how to throw a jab. So his boxing has improved a lot, and we'll see, though. I mean, with heavyweights, one punch is all it takes.
Right. Rhonda actually made a bunch of controversial comments recently about how MMA could save the world and all this other stuff. And it just keeps coming up in my mixed martial arts alerts about all this stuff that she said.
Save the world?
Yeah, basically, if a lot of people could get involved in MMA, there'd be less violence and, stuff like that.
You know, whenever I hear sweeping statements like that and all this, I have to flash back on Shel Stone when he says, at the end of the day, this is just a fist fight in a steel cage.
And then, of course, the big debut of Phil Brooks, a.k.a. CM Punk, fighting Mickey Gall, who's 2-0, and obviously Brooks is 0-0-0 because he's been a wrestler most of his career. And I thought he said something kind of funny in the pre-fight interviews. I did read about this. I did not actually see him make this comment, but he said something along the lines of, when you shit yourself on national TV, it's hard to have a bad performance that's worse than that. So I don't know the backstory on that, but apparently during a WWE taping or live event, he actually shit his pants.
So. You know, he's a 4-1 dog here in this. That sounds pretty excessive to me. I mean, like he was mentioning on the countdown too that people are looking at this like. Either he's either going to be an impending train wreck or he's going to show his athleticism. I mean, this Gall guy's only had a couple fights. I mean, I don't think he should be a 4-1 favorite. I don't know. My take on it.
And the other thing is Gall has stitches, in the preview that they filmed, you can see he's got a bunch of stitches over one of his eyes. So I don't know whether that says anything about his fighting style, but. Obviously, if you've got a fresh cut, it's easier to open that up. And obviously, Phil's going to watch that tape, so he's going to know exactly where that cut was. And if he's on point in his boxing, he could open that right up and make it a fight.
Yeah, I don't know if they're looking at the age factor, because I guess Gall's 23 and Punk's 37. But still, there's a lot of that athleticism that Punk has shown. I mean, you can't just walk up to the WWE and say, let me in. I mean, it's high-level gymnastics. So, I just don't see him being that heavy of an underdog. It's going to be an intriguing fight.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what kind of style he has. And just the fact that he is on the main card blows me away because,
you probably heard that they had to break some rules here. They had to make an exception because in the state of Ohio, you need 4 amateur bouts to turn pro. You need a minimum of 4 amateur MMA fights to turn pro. And he's had 0.
Right.
So I don't know how they did it, but somehow they got around that.
Yeah, I did hear actually there was some complaints from fighters about that, but I didn't know what it was about. I just did see that something about breaking the rules, and I figured it had something to do with him being a debut
fighter. That's what they're
talking
about.
Main card, that's what I thought it was about, but yeah, that's pretty crazy. But I mean, no record at all, no fights, it's got to be tough. I mean, pressure wise, he's got to be going crazy. But he has trained a long time. They did put his debut off a while, so apparently maybe they didn't think he was ready, maybe he didn't think he was ready, and now he's obviously confident that he is. So hopefully we see
something. Well, and you remember, too, that he's used to the bright lights.
Right.
I mean, I don't think the crowd's going to affect him as it would for the normal person the first time in Octagon. They say there's Octagon jitters. I don't see that being that big of a problem for him. And I think with Mickey, it's going to be a problem for him, too. Here he is on the main draw, and I think he's going to have some nerve issues too.
Right. And we also have Uriah Faber on this card. He is 33-9, fighting Jimmy Rivera. He is 19-1. That should be a decent fight there.
Uriah, yeah, that's the young lion versus the old gray mare. Yeah. So.
And then two female fights back-to-back on this card, which I don't think you see a lot of, but, you know, big names here. We got Jessica Andrade, who is 14-5, fighting Joanne Calderwood, one of my favorite fighters. She is 11-1, and absolutely love listening to her talk. She got that Scottish accent. And she ought to do kids' movies, because that would be a great voice for kids' movies. She's funny, funny kid. And if you listened to her talk and didn't know she was a fighter, you'd never guess. But anyway, Jessica I is the other fight. She is fighting Betch Kohea, who's 9-2. Jessica is 11-5. And that should be a decent fight there.
I think that Jessica is probably a little better on the feet, and I think if she can keep it standing, it should be hers.
Betch obviously showed some of her weaknesses in the Ronda fight. But she did catch her a couple times. But then again, Ronda was just determined to go out there and beat her at her own game and didn't really care too much about defense. I think Jessica will take a more tactical approach to this fight, and I think it'll probably get out of the first round. And then the Carney, Nick Lentz, is also on this card. He is 26-7-2, fighting Michael McBride, who's 8-1. And we got Brad Tavares also in action. He is 13-4, fighting Kyle Magalhaes, who is 9-2. Yancy Medeiros, also on the card, 12-4. Fighting, get it in a minute, I believe it's... Sean Spencer, who is 12-5. CB Dalloway, also on this card, he is 15-8, fighting Francimar Barroso, who is 18-5. And second fight of the night is Drew Dober versus just off screen here. Sure, dog's giving me shit. Jason Gonzalez versus Drew Dober. Gonzalez is 10-2. Dober is 16-7. Then the first fight of the night, Damir Hadzovic. There it goes again, jumping on me. 1 second. Anyway, who cares about the first fight of the night, right? Guy who's fighting in it, I guess. Anyway, Hadzovic is 10-3, fighting Yusuke Kasuya, who is 9-2-2. Here's an interesting fight movie story. They're doing a movie about Chuck Wepner, who I'm sure you guys both know from watching a lot of his fights, what his nickname was. Actually, I think it's a lot better than the Choir Boy. Even though it doesn't really say anything about him. The Bleeder was Chuck's nickname. And I'm not sure
the if Bayonne Bleeder.
The Bayonne Bleeder, yeah. But they're doing a movie about him called The Bleeder. And he obviously was famous for bleeding, but also for his fight against Muhammad Ali, which was a little bit controversial because there was a knockdown or supposed knockdown that I don't know if it was called a slip or that people thought it was a slip more than a knockdown, but you know, Chuck did such a good job there that the story is that Sylvester Stallone wrote the screenplay for Rocky after he saw that fight because he was inspired by that fight.
Yep. So,
he took a lot of the details from Rocky Marciano. Chuck Wepner was supposedly the inspiration for the character of Rocky and for the first screenplay. The reason I mention this movie is Liev Schreiber is the actor who is playing Chuck Wepner. And how about this for wanting to be an authentic actor? He allowed himself to be punched close to 800 times so his director could get realistic shots.
Ouch.
For the movie. I don't know whether he really bled like the bleeder, but he took 800 punches. Real punches. So pretty impressive. Other stars of the movie, it just gives given their last name, Watts. I don't know. I don't know if that's a one name person, Watts. I don't know. That's all it's giving me. Ron Perlman, Elizabeth Moss, Jim Gaffigan, and Pooch Hall as Ali, whoever that is.
Wow. Well, I remember Ali was so mad after that knocked down. I'm sure you guys have seen that. Oh, he was bad. That was just so hilarious. I mean, before that fight, you know, that happened here in the area, my area, and the Weppner was given no chance. I mean, it was just, so, it was almost like, what a mismatch. And he really showed his heart, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, obviously, very tough guy. And every time I think of Chuck Weppner, I always think of a picture I got out of Boxing Illustrated that I had on my wall for years of his face just all bloodied up, just covered in blood, like he'd been stabbed a bunch of times or something. Just all over his face. And I don't even know what fight it was from. But, yeah, that was always right on my wall growing up. The Bleeder. So that should be a good movie. Also, the premiere of Bleed for This, which is the story of one of Tony's other favorite fighters other than Rocky Marciano. Who we met at Rocky's statue. And we've interviewed a couple times. Vinny Paz.
Right.
And I actually, literally, me, Tony, and Vinny were like the last ones out of the stadium that day. And Vinny's asking us at the Rocky statue dedication where the party is. You know, he wants to go party with us. So that was funny. That was funny. I still kick myself to this day for not bringing something for everybody to sign.
Jeez.
I didn't get a single
one. Yeah, really.
That, that was dumb.
I got some good photos. That's what I like most, getting photos.
Right. Yeah, you were not shy about asking for those. And then again, everybody was saying they could see you from across the whole place with your hat on there, your Italian hat there.
What? All right. Well, because he's, you know, Vinny's known as a night owl. He's got to be up like all hours and I'm going to sleep till 2, 3 in the afternoon. And, you know, a few people were commenting on his Facebook page like, oh, my God, you're out in the daylight. We didn't think you could be out in the daylight.
Yeah, he's crazy like that.
Oh, speaking of movies, has anyone seen Hands of Stone?
I have not.
I have not. Have you?
I went yesterday. And I was kind of pleasantly surprised because that movie had been panned quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I think, first off, on the good for the good stuff, I think Usher really did a great job of portraying Sugar Ray Leonard. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has a dancing background, and he had spent time with Leonard, and he even had some of his facial expressions down. I mean, I was really surprised with that. And it covered the history of Panama, you know, back in the mid-60s when they really started demanding to get the canal back, and I thought that was fairly accurate history. The problem is Duran would have been 14 then, and they had him in the movie as like an 8-year-old. Maybe I'm nitpicking a little bit. And in the 1950s, Ray Arcelt did have a problem with the mob in New York, but the movie portrayed it as even when he started managing Duran, that he was still having problems. And I'd never read anything about that because after Frankie Carbo and Linky Palomino, I believe it was, after they went to Alcatraz, I think the mob's influence was really reduced after that with that International Boxing Club, I believe, when that was gone. And so there were some historical inaccuracies that for a boxing nerd like me. Now, they did have the right robes on when they went in the ring for both fights between Leonard and Duran.
And they covered the Buchanan fight pretty good. I think that was fairly accurate. But after Duran pulled the no mas, that was the end of him and Ray Arcel, because I specifically remember Arcel wrote him a letter urging him to quit. And it was the contents of the letter was ending, everything has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And Arcel was done with him. And in the movie, it wasn't quite like that. In the movie, he wanted Arcel to handle his comeback after the Nomos fight when he had retired, but then he decided he was going to keep fighting. And in the movie, Arcel just said, or De Niro slash Arcel said, no, you don't need me. Just get Panama Lewis. He'll take care of it. And, of course, it had Arcel there in New York after he beat Davey Moore, after Duran won the junior middleweight title. Now, that didn't happen either. So they took some artistic liberties with that. So, but overall, I was a little happier with it than I thought I would be.
Yeah, I think one review I read said something about the storyline was really confusing and it was kind of hard to follow. But as far as the acting itself, I mean, that was great. There's nobody I've read said that was bad. Everybody thought it was great. So, and you got to remember too. I mean, we've been talking about this movie probably 6 or 7 years. It feels like that they've been talking about making this. So they spent a long, long time getting this movie ready. Because, I mean, I can remember when they first announced that Usher was going to play Sugar Ray Leonard. And, you know, he had very little acting experience, but, you know, he was taking it seriously. Like, he was really getting in shape for it and obviously looked a lot like him. When they got all the afro up on him. So I bet that was kind of funny to see. But,
yeah, it brought back a lot of memories for me because I remember where I watched the fights, what I was doing on the night, and where my life was at then, and it was kind of worth it for me just from the nostalgia. But I think you guys enjoy it.
Yep. Misha Tate making the news for reasons other than fighting lately. She's out on a hike out in the Vegas Valley the other day in Mount Charleston, which is a mountain you can see from pretty much all over Vegas. And they actually, I think, have skiing on the top of it in the winter, which is kind of hard for me to believe until I see it, being in Vegas. But Am Ellis, she was a six-year-old... Amber was the mother of a six-year-old daughter named Kai who fell and broke her arm on the hike. And Misha Tate basically saved her. I have not read the details of it, but I thought that was kind of an interesting story. She's an all-around superhero. Also, breaking news today, Shane Carwin and the UFC are parting ways, and he's making his comeback with some other promotions. Nobody's actually made it official yet, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be Bellator, if it's not the UFC. He says, I'm now a free agent. The heavyweight division has a lot of great fights, and not all of them are in the UFC. I want to prove myself to myself and my fans that I belong at the top of the division. Today, that journey begins. He's 12-2, 41 years old, hasn't seen action in over 5 years, and temporarily retired in the wake of his three-round shellacking, says the article, at the hands of fellow division face smasher Junior Dos Santos.
Yeah, that was an ugly fighting. Ugly fight.
Yeah, very ugly. When they call it a face smashing, yeah, I'd say that's a bad fight. And another horrific, horrific story of an MMA fighter being involved in a hit and run. Actually, no, it wasn't a hit and run. It was a vehicular manslaughter this time. They actually did find the woman, a 72-year-old woman, drunk and driving, and mowed down MMA fighter Marcus Kowal's toddler son in a California crosswalk. Killed the kid. Was in the stroller and everything. Just came by and hit her. Hit the kid. And they did have an article the other day about they're donating the son's, all of the son's organs. So he will live on in some fashion, but just a tragic story. Donna?
Yeah, and you know, when you're 72 years old, first off, what the hell are you driving around drunk for? No one should be doing it at any age. Now, after this, you know, going to prison for 10 years when you're 72 is a little different than when you're 27.
Yeah.
She'll deserve every day of it.
So, I don't know what the deal is. And I think it's the second one that was in a crosswalk, too, because the guy, Jordan Parsons, that was a crosswalk, too. The guy was going over 100 miles an hour, 27-year-old who had a suspended license there. And it took him a while to find him, but I don't think it took him that long to find this lady. And we were talking about Tyson Fury and Klitschko earlier. That rematch is now confirmed. It's going to take place in Manchester, England on October 29th. So it was just confirmed yesterday. So, I don't know whatever happened with all those allegations of steroid testing that was positive from the, I think it was the World Anti-Doping Agency. But, you know, I did remember reading that Klitschko, or that Tyson Fury was about to sue those people for putting those reports out, even though the fight didn't happen, the initial fight, because of an injury. The initial rematch, I should say. And that's about it for all the big, big news I got and upcoming stuff. Unless you guys have anything to add, I guess that's it for the show.
One more thing. The initial press conference of Kovalev.
You lose your tongue?
Yeah, of Kovalev and Andre Ward.
Yeah.
It came out today. And our former guest, Kathy Duva, was got the ball rolling. She was the hostess, the MC. And it's fairly interesting. We'll see how it goes. This is going to be an intriguing fight. The question is the inactivity slowed Ward down too much? Because he has to fight a perfect fight for 12 rounds.
Yeah, well, not only that, but, I mean, this is going to be the first guy that we've actually heard of. That he's fought in a while, because I mean, other than our other former guest there, I'm drawing a blank on, but from Massachusetts there, who just kind of risked a lot on his record to go and take this fight. So he's in. He had a tough fight against somebody. He lost that. But anyway, yeah, it's pretty interesting. We're going to have to keep an eye on it and see how it develops. But I really like Kovalev's chances because, I mean, you really, so many people are afraid of Ward. And, you know, there's reasons why they're afraid of him. But you got to think that it's got to be its own form of ring rust when you haven't fought anybody that's really,
yeah,
really
so
high
he caliber. He's got, I think, 5 fights in 5 years. And ring rust is bad for anyone, but especially a guy with his style.
Right.
And his I just think he's really got an uphill battle. And I just hope it sells well, because there was an article I read about it that they're a little concerned about that, because these guys were really professional. There's not a lot of trash talk. And for fight guys like us, we don't need the trash talk, because we understand that this is an old school. You know, both guys are putting their undefeated record on the line. They're not being protected. And I got to respect both these guys. To me, there's no loser, even if someone comes up short. But for the average fan, maybe it's not going to be the big event that we're hoping it would be. So we'll see how the ticket sales go.
Yeah, I'm pretty much betting it's going to be a decision either way. They're definitely going to be a lot of boxing as opposed to brawling in this one, but. You never know. You never know. Anything can happen, as they say. All right. So until next week, when we will definitely have a guest one way or another. I tried getting Joe Warren on the show this week. It would have been a taped interview, but they were all screwed up yesterday on their fighter interviews. Bellator offered me the shot, and they changed the time 3 times on me, and then I tried to get it postponed because the time last time they gave me didn't work, and then what do? They call me 2 hours early. So I was in the middle of a restaurant. Nope, can't do it. Sorry. So. Hopefully we can either send him questions or get that rescheduled sometime. But they did offer a bunch of fighters that are on their next card, and the one that stuck out to me was Joe, because another guy around my age still fighting, so kind of wanted to pick his brain about that. Anyway, till next week, thanks for stopping by, folks.
All right, guys. Big weekend. All right.
Look for me on TV tomorrow night. I'm wearing my fedora.
We will.
All right, buddy. We'll be looking for you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Hasta la vista, baby.